We're checking in again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our Tacky Talk update. How are you, Tacky? Welcome to April.
Hey, yes. Good April, everyone. Good to see you, Joe. And unfortunately, I didn't get to do an April Fool's joke on you on Saturday. Got to put that on my calendar next time.
I was checking for kick me signs in my back all day.
Well, I'll give a little shout out to my colleague, John Keenan. Senator Keenan had a fun April Fool's one regarding a filing a bill. A fake bill regarding the danger of hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus?
Yeah, if you're not checked John Keenan's Twitter account, he has this wonderful video of him talking about the dangers of hippos and how it affects the ecosystem in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty good, I have to say. I mean, I think I heard a few responses was taking him a little bit serious, who clearly do not know where hippos live.
I don't think we're in Africa.
Exactly. You always have a little bit of fun. Electeds, sometimes a little challenge to having a little fun on things like April Fool's Day on social media because, people take us a little too seriously sometimes in certain things. But, kudos to John on driving up some Twitter traffic and having a little fun on Saturday about the dangers of hippopotamus in Massachusetts. For reference, folks, if you want a little bit of a zingier version of hippopotamus, Z Frank on YouTube, he used to own the Huffington Post, I believe, actually has a educational, humorous YouTube video about hippopotamus, which he then sent to John after I saw his Twitter feed, like, are you stealing it from Z Frank?
Okay, so it took on a life of its own, it sounds like.
Well, at least on a texting message basis. Nothing says we can't have a little bit of fun with each other. People would have a nice chuckle and an April Fool's joke. Definitely look at John Keenan's feed on the dangers of hippos.
Okay, I'll check that out for sure. In the meantime, what else has been going on?
Now, honestly, it's been fairly quiet. I mean, we're waiting for the budget to pop next Wednesday, noontime. I'm aware that we're still taking meetings in Ways and Means. So, Speaker Mariano and Chairman Mekowitz have both been seeing members. I've been talking to my colleagues, and they've already had meetings set up regarding a myriad of different issues that they're interested in. As you all know, this is not just statewide issues. I mean, people have constituent issues at home. They are bringing to the speaker and the Ways and Means chair's attention. But at some point, they're going to go to print. And probably sometime by this weekend, they're going to start to finalize the numbers to make sure everything's sort of balanced as best they can. They'll do another review when we get to the budget process on the numbers anyway. They keep reviewing them constantly. And then, and then we'll get the amendment process going next Friday. So when you talk to me next week, we're probably going to be somewhere deep in the amendment process as we're trying to move through the budget, trying to figure out where things are. And the advocates basically have less than 48 hours to just put the hard arm on reps to file amendments on behalf of various advocacy agencies around the state. And then obviously, I've been doing this a while now, so I sort of have certain favorites at home regarding earmarks, as well as Bruce and well as the speaker. So, we'll continue our process there, and we don't like to overlap. People don't always realize that, we each have separate things pretty much on purpose. Because we all file the same thing, then, we're not getting maximum dollar benefit.
No, right. They can only vote on it once. So you increase your chances if you have separate items. Yeah.
That's correct. So it's not like we coordinate entirely, but and I know that we represent different parts of the city, but a lot of our interests do overlap, despite the fact we represent different parts of the city. So, it's kind of behooving of us and Senator Keenan to ensure that, all of us are following different things to get maximum dollar opportunity. At the same time, one of the benefits, and I've not lied about this already, having Ron Mariano as speaker works very well for the Quincy delegation. So.
Yep, it has both for local projects and for statewide projects too, for other communities, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been definitely the more let's get going speaker I've seen in a very long time. And again, everyone works at a different capacity, different pace, but Ron, does not let flies come to him. He generally goes swat the flies, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, speaking of a state issue here in Quincy, I just read in the Quincy Sun this week, the state is looking to take over the courthouse from the county. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, this is an ongoing issue for quite some time. I remember back a long time ago, you know, the clerk, chief magistrate, Arthur Tobin had already expressed the delegation quite not just recent, but a long time ago that the courthouse needs to be replaced. And the courthouse replacement process has always been based on severity of infrastructure. If it's coming apart, you need to be addressed first. Well, Quincy Judicial Court is not coming apart exactly as fast as other courthouses. It's fairly young, but it is definitely undersized for the amount of work that's involved because it is one of the busiest courthouses south of Boston. It's just can't fit anything in there anymore. I mean, there's no space for victim advocates. The DA section has you open the door, you can open the door into somebody's face. Into the DA section. Probation is no longer there. They actually have to, they have like a small presence, but have to have a physical office somewhere else in Quincy. And we don't have a housing court, for example. I would love to have a housing court in Quincy, dedicated to eviction issues and landlord-tenant disputes and things like that, where you're not waiting in district or forced to go to Dedham Superior. It is a space limitation. So my understanding so far is that DCAM was engaged in conversations prior to COVID in 2019, and the whole everything got shelved in 2019. And unbeknownst to me, and probably the rest of the delegation, they were already in conversations with the county commissioners regarding transfer of the courthouse or actually sale of the courthouse. I kind of wish they told us sooner than later, but this is the hallmark of the Baker administration, who doesn't think the legislatures are relevant. And then as a result, when there's going to be a sale of the courthouse from the county to the DCAM, which is the state, the Division of Assets and Capital Management, or Capital Assets and Capital Management. So it's a capital management and assets, whatever. They require by law to have a public hearing, both the county and the state, for processes, which is going to be coming up next Wednesday at 4. Honestly, the county can't build a new courthouse. They can't bond. They don't generate enough revenue to bond on their own because you can't bond if you don't have a dedicated revenue stream. And then the courthouse, the court facilities, as well as the DA and, you know, perhaps a housing court and other things will go into that space. One of the challenges we have with this is that there's insufficient parking in the proposal. There's just about 200 units of parking. They want to try to cut that in half. That is not acceptable. To the city, nor to the delegation, because of the nature of the development downtown, as they only plan for parking in the city tied to direct development. So a lot of the parking issues in the city and downtown are correlated. And it makes some sense, right? You don't build more than you need because now you're just wasting money. So as future development comes forward, the parking garages or parking space the city needs to plan for will revolve around the future development. The courthouse was never part of the Quincy Settler Development Plan whatsoever because, again, no one talked to anybody. And that is a problem. So a lot of this train has already left the station before the delegation was able to put input about, for example, things like sale price, right? We could have worked with the county commissioners to, go and ask for market value, right? Can we work something out? Or, if the speaker had known or I had known or Jarkina had known, maybe could have, squirrel some ARPA money around here and there because we knew the county got, $4 million plus in ARPA money on its own. They had a lot of freedom to what they could do with as well as the state. So we could have cobbled together some money too to get some startup money for the courthouse on the property end of it and try to keep the county from underselling an asset. But that train has left the station. And I obviously can tell from my tone, I'm not pleased about that. So, I mean, I came late to the game, not because I wasn't paying attention. It was because no one freaking told me anything. And that is a problem. And again, hallmark of the Baker administration. No desire to cooperate with the legislature to try to find more efficient way of doing it. Now, as a result of the fact that the delegation and the city, is expressing serious issues, parking issue, plus inflationary costs, and the project price has gone up since 2019. So the 2019 original budget price, it's probably going to jack up by $25 million or so. And we'll see if they fit into the existing bond budget going to FY 24. So, but step one, the state needs to control the property, namely DCAM, and then we move forward from there. I've not seen a 25% design plan. We've only got very preliminary sketches. So, it did inform DCAM that when we hit key markers here, the delegation should be informed when we hit certain key markers so we provide impact on our thoughts on the matter. And, guys like John Keenan's been around a little longer than I have, and obviously the mayor and the mayor's staff, about the history of that land, which is, if you look over it, it's not a square or a rectangle. It's not bordered correctly. And there's a story behind those things that I am a little young to know. DCAM should have known as part of, back in 2019. So, yeah, I'm not happy about being late to the dance on this one.
Yeah. Do you remember what the original cost estimate was? I want to say it was over $100 million, I think, for this Justice Center that they were talking about initially.
Yeah, it's about 160.
Okay.
That was pre-COVID prices. It obviously would not be the current footprint. Objective would be a minimum increase the footprint by no less than four times. The state would not be subject to local zoning height, so they could build this thing as tall as you want. Obviously, the more they build, parking becomes a greater issue. And of course, cost goes with that. So, they want to get to at least minimum four times the current size. That would be a dramatic difference. And of course, bringing a new HAV system, for example, would also be wonderful because of the nature of COVID, which I know is still the second biggest killer in the country after you get past heart disease. And hopefully it would continually decline over time, but still you got other airborne viruses out there that is not COVID, that people forget they exist, and a much more modernized HAV system and modern facilities will help address potential pathogens in the air, particularly in tight spaces.
Yeah, so would the state just continue to, retain ownership once the project is done, or would it revert back to the county?
No, we pay for it. We're keeping it.
Okay.
It is a sale. This is not a lease agreement. This is a sale from the county to the state. So we would take ownership of it, meaning the state. So, and then the state would run it, and the state will allow judiciary and the DA's office and probation and other state agencies and county agencies to use it, as they normally would. The other thing that obviously upsets everybody as well is the fact there was never a plan in place regarding temporary quarters for the existing facility. So
they ended up at Lombardo's and Randolph.
Yeah, you can talk to district attorney about that. District Attorney Morrissey had mixed results out of Lombardo as well as the court administrators. But I mean, they also need a stage office space, right? And they need to have substantial amount, which actually adds to the bottom line capital cost of the project. And we all know space is a premium. I know office space, is kind of barren in certain areas because of the nature of how we're working today. But it doesn't mean that it's getting a lot cheaper either. The commercial real estate prices has not fallen at a pace as a result of more people working at home. I mean, obviously, at some point it will when lease agreements come up, but the current lease agreements are still in place, meaning the valuation is still, in my opinion, abnormally high. That being said, they didn't have a plan either on that. And you can't demolish that courthouse until you know where the current facilities are going. And also the issues brought regarding Dedham. I mean, Dedham is approaching, Dedham was built during the Civil War, for Pete's sakes, right? So you got that issue going on. And, if Dedham decides to go to rehab, perhaps, or move or expand, I have no idea. Dedham has not been planned out yet. You have to have some place for them too. And originally we're thinking, well, you could create extra space in Quincy and move Dedham here temporarily while they try to figure that out. And when Dedham's gone, the extra space can be utilized for other purposes in the regional justice system. But the cost would jack it up by another $100 million. So that was taken off the table. And of course, the height would be a lot taller than six stories. Yeah. Again, very preliminary, have not seen an actual design. A lot of logistic questions involved, but the first step is the acquisition of the site from the county by end of fiscal year.
All right, stay tuned. We'll see what happens. It's going to be a big project when it does happen.
Yeah, and again, I'm not pleased about being late to the party on this one. And it's not by my design. This was intentional by the Baker administration.
Yeah. Has that improved under the current new administration, the communication process?
It's improving a bit. We still don't know who's working where, actually. I think people undervalue exactly the size of state government. And they've been replacing legislative contacts. So, you know, our liaison, so to speak, with the various agencies and commissions, as well as the governor's office and the various other, direct agencies are under her, as well as lieutenant governor's contacts as well. So, you know, we will be receiving a new contact PDF book in the new future. We've already been informed that they're running a little behind because, again, they still shifted. They shifted, started shifting people around a little bit, and new hires are coming on. So this is not abnormal. We generally get an updated book every year. Maybe 10, 20% will change every couple of years because people move on to better jobs and, you know, life changes with folks. But, you know, the expectation is most of these folks we see in the book will be around a minimum of 3.5 years. But yeah, we got an email earlier this week saying, you know, yeah, we're working on it. We have some changes going on. You got to get the update. I'm hoping a lot of my friends in government stay in government because it's always good to know people that you already know and know how to deal with and you know you. So, you know, so-called, you know, my weirdness, so to speak.
I understand. No, there's definitely a personal rapport, you know, once you get to know somebody, you get things done a lot quicker, I think.
Absolutely. If you have a strong a prior relationship and they understand how you work and how they work, it makes life so much easier. So we'll see how it goes from there. I mean, every governor's had different approaches. I mean, Weld administration or Weld Part 2 encouraged their individual agencies to talk to legislators directly to expedite time to get things done. You know, Salucci continued that path. Jane Swift changed it around. They try to consolidate in her office. Mitt Romney, 100% consolidation. You couldn't breathe unless Mitt Romney said so. Made constituent services extend time like by 5. It took forever to get anything done for any constituent. Deval Patrick continued that path. Even knew how to work around them. A lot of people try to. And then, frankly, Baker followed both Mitt and Deval's pattern regarding hyper-centralization. Again, you know, legislators will start to find friends in government, try to see if they can get some stuff done behind the scenes right. The governor. So, you know, obviously, Governor Healey has not been around as long as I have dealing with constituent services. So I don't know who they talk to. You know, I'm hoping we get more direct access to agencies. Rather than have to funnel everything to the governor's office.
Yeah. Well, different management styles, but I would think with the lieutenant governor's municipal experience, she understands the importance of constituent services.
I would hope so. But I mean, there's always some advantages to having legislators talk to you because, you know, mayors can't get good responses from state agencies and legislators should have better responses, to be frank. I voted in their budget for Pete's sakes.
Be nice to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much more meaner. I'm not. I come from the mindset that you don't respond. Why am I paying you? But then again, I don't run Ways and Means. I'm not the speaker.
Right.
It seems to have gotten a lot kinder in the building since I was brought up way back when. But yeah, I mean, we shall see. I'm still trying to get on the calendar to see the governor. You've seen her all over the news, all over the place. Mm-hmm. So she has a lot on her plate as people are trying to get her attention. And she's learning about all the problems and benefits that, you know, been left over from the prior administration. And same with the secretariat, says they need to reorganize their own executive staffs and also reorganize the agencies beneath them. I don't know if the governor is going to be selecting her own commissioners and undersecretaries. I don't know if the secretaries are responsible for finding vacancies and commissioners and undersecretaries. So, again, as you said, every administration is different, management style is different, and it's not entirely clear to me. And again, it's not my purview because I'm not in charge of hiring. So right. It's not me going there like, hey, you know, hire or fire this person. I mean, it's not my, I don't have to deal with it every day, right?
Yeah, no, I get it. It's you've got your own committee to deal with, and so I understand, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a topic that's always ripe for conversation, Tacky, the MBTA.
Yeah, they're awful.
20, they need 2,800 new employees by the end of the year? That doesn't seem possible.
No, it's not. I mean, it used to be 1,000 about 3 months ago was the head count. There are shuttle buses going to be running in Quincy as they move between tracks as quickly as possible. I'm not saying they're replacing every, well, no, they are basically replacing every railway tie at this point. The ultrasound, as I talked about before, showed massive integrity issues throughout the entire system. And the 2-hour window ensured, including safety and shutdowns. It takes an hour to, shut down and I to get out, depending on fire from the station. It can take even longer to get you out there, plus lighting in the middle of the night, plus trying to make sure you got a nighttime inspection done correctly before you turn the power back on. So, at no time is the MBTA going to ever allow a train on without completing an inspection after the work is done. And they got to give enough buffer time to turn on the power back. And if they see anything wrong on inspection, they got to make sure it's done correctly because you don't want to train it at rail. It is that serious, folks. So I understand and fully hear from you all regarding inconveniences. Trust me, I hear you. But a train derailment, I will hear from you for a different reason.
Right.
So seen that at JFK station already, not that long ago. And of course, you had problems on Orange Line, but that can be also tied to the manufacturing plant in Springfield, or the assembly plant more accurately. In April, unfortunately, there'll be inconveniences for our constituents again in April as they kind of do some more shuttle busing around so they can get more longer windows to try to get this done faster. It is manual labor. You got to physically go there, rip stuff up, put it back down, level it out, make sure it's all good, and not all the surfaces are even. Those of you who ride the train know that certain sections are elevated. It's not like it's flat land. So, it's tough. And, way back when, over 15 years ago, they did renovations on the bridge section of the Ponset. That took a very long time. I suspect at some point you have to go back on that bridge. It's been a long time since they did massive rehab on the rail system, too. That's going to have to happen at some point. It's sitting on salt water, folks. At some point it's going to have to happen. And it's not just a red line. This is a systematic problem. So, and I remember the days when people were clamoring me for a T job, right? I mean, everybody wanted a T job. Not anymore. You don't need a politician to get you a job. You just apply.
Pretty much they're offering $7,500 bonuses now for a lot of positions. Then we should mention this. There is a job fair at the Wollaston Station April 22nd.
Yeah, if you're looking for some work, get down there. But it's also a change in mentality. I mean, some of his work, I mean, laying down rail, putting down ties is backbreaking work. I mean, it's a young man's job. It's but we have a changing work environment. People do not like manual labor. People, want to do service industries. People want to work off a cell phone. I mean, you got a whole young generation here that never worked with their hands.
Right.
Much less worked because the economy was that good for a stretch before COVID. I grew up in the era where, everybody had to work, right? So again, there's also that different changing world on the workforce. And as we talk multiple times, it's a pro-work environment. Workers are dictating terms right now on employers regarding not just wages, but also working conditions. And, you're going out there, you're getting trained to go out there to put down ties, and rail. You're getting trained to work on heavy equipment. You're getting trained to work, on bus driving. You need a CDL license to work on buses. You got to, train operation isn't, just like hit start and stop. You got to be trained to make sure that, you don't jolt the passengers, right? You got to deal with customer service folks. Angry MBTA customers don't help. And of course, this crime on the T. We all know this. This is not new. And even the MBTA police force short well over 100 police officers because honestly, people don't scramble to be cops like they used to as well. It's a labor shortage on all fronts. You got a generation of folks that have a whole different attitude about what they think is acceptable for them to work.
Yeah. And it's manifesting itself in these shortages and these, union disputes. Workforce policies, basically.
No, agreed. And like I said, if you're a little bit older, you're closer to my age or your age, you think, oh, yeah, everybody wants it to T. That's not the case anymore, folks. It really isn't. Again, it's a changing workforce. If you got kids that are like 22, and you need to give them a house for a job because, you know, they know it's a market that works for them. It's just the MBTA. They're going to snuff the nose at you.
Right. Yeah. Although, there are opportunities if you don't mind working, you know, there's huge opportunities for young people. You could pretty much write your own ticket. And those skills that you learn are transferable, you know, to other areas too.
Absolutely. It's upward mobility in places like the MBTA. You don't have to be a rail car operator forever. You don't have to drive a bus forever. You could, you know, there are opportunities to move into a more white collar work and, you know, perhaps into management. But I mean, $35 an hour to work rail replacement to me is a pretty good deal. Plus you get a bonus. You know, I'm often too old for trying to put down rail, but I mean, you know, when I was 22, you offered me $35 an hour. I mean, it's not a bad deal. Plus overtime.
Pretty attractive. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus benefits, plus pension.
Yeah.
Good luck finding that in the private sector.
Do that for 20 years and you can put away a nice little retirement nest egg. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, you have a mobility opportunity if you're ambitious to try to work into management or, you know, do something else in the MBTA. It's like a big corporation, a big transportation corporation. So you can kind of like, you know, start to like build a career path. And you're right, you can get out. Transportation is going to be one of those things that no matter where you are in the country, someone's going to need transportation expertise. So, you know, it's also going to be other problems state government in general as well. Again, you know, the benefits versus the money versus the pension doesn't attract people like they used to. It really doesn't.
Yeah. I know we've talked about the situation with the banking industry in the past. Any changes since last we chatted, do you think?
Well, there's still a panic on the banks. I mean, it was some interesting statistics since December about the volume of money being moved around between banks. As we said, you know, there's more money in banks in the United States, just the United States, than, you know, the size of the national debt. I mean, I never realized how much physical cash is inside our country, not all the stuff that's outside our country. And, you know, I mean, like well into like almost $2 trillion of almost over $30 trillion of banking has been moving around over the course of 3 months as people, you know, frankly, looking for better interest rates.
Right.
You got saving accounts online. They're approaching 4% or higher. You got some regional banks are offering almost 5% CD rates for 3 months. Some are actually allowing so-called flexible CD rates. Where it's really kind of behaving a little bit like a saving account, you know, starting at 4%. You know, treasury bonds and interest rates on CDs are almost identical, and you don't have to pay state taxes on treasury bonds. And this is a problem for banks, okay, particularly treasury bonds and money market. By the way, you're not FDIC protected on money market, just so you're all aware. Because every treasury bond you buy or every money market you go into takes a depositor away, which means the bank doesn't have a depositor to issue a loan. So banks are now going to tighten heavily because they physically don't have enough money. With the higher interest rates and even the wages are up, you know, wages and inflation is still not matching, anywhere close to matching still. You know, the banks have to, particularly regional banks, smaller banks have to take much more scrutiny about whether they're going to give a loan out. Because one, not enough depositors, two, they have to pay, even though get more interest back, deposit is not getting that interest. The deposit is going to move someplace else with better interest. And three, you know, they know that the market's tightening up regarding people's pocketbooks. Banks know more than anybody else how much your savings accounts have. You know, so they know the drawdown, not necessarily just for moving money to bonds, money market, or CDs in other places. Plus, you know, they know that you got to spend down because you need to pay for things, whether it be your own current debt, new debt or other things you need to do. And credit cards are still over $1 trillion of credit cards being utilized right now, which will have an adverse impact on consumers eventually. This can't keep up. And consumers already changed behavior regarding what they're purchasing these days. And even Costco is feeling a pinch. I mean, certain industries are recession resistant. Costco's, TJ Maxx, you know, Marshall's, I mean, they tend to be resistant to recessionary behavior. People are still spending money in restaurants. People still are traveling. I told you guys, I saw Expedia in the hallways of the state house, and they're still seeing strong numbers. They're skeptical too, because, you know, eventually you're going to run out of money. Right. But, you know, right now numbers are strong, but no industry is expecting a continually strong numbers from consumers. They're all bracing for a point where consumers are going to, you know, feel the pinch really badly. And, you know, you're going to not do discretionary stuff. You're going to just squeeze back into core core things like any other recession. But, you know, the depth and size of recession is highly questionable. But, you know, all retailers, banks, and service industries are just trying to figure this out to brace for impact. And of course, going to hoard money. I mean, this is an 08 behavior. Corporations are going to hoard money in preparation for consumers not spending money. And yeah, you're going to hear about corporate profits again, big time. On the margin, not necessarily the size of the profits in terms of the gross revenue, but the margins, because they're going to need to start hoarding just in case consumers just stop spending.
Yeah. Another pressure, I think, is going to be energy prices. OPEC is cutting production, so that's going to certainly jack up gas prices.
Yeah, it's still pretty stable in Quincy. I mean, the BJ's jumped from 299 to 302, if you remember, but I've also been seeing, you know, about 313, 319, you know, different parts of the city. You know, Boston, it's still well over $4 because of, you know, the lease agreements and the properties. You know, that they have to bake that into the price of what the gas station needs to get you to pay. I think, you know, consumers again will travel heavily during Memorial Weekend. They'll travel heavily July 4th. But I think they're going to be much more localized again regarding vacation. Those who already bought their tickets, you know, back in January is all set because there's going to be no price change because you already bought your tickets in January. But I mean, as you get closer to summertime, the price is going to shift up. Do I think gas is going to go up a lot? I don't think so. I think consumer demand is going to dictate these prices. And secondly, the refineries in this country has all finally come up to speed. We talked about this when we had higher gas prices. People don't realize a barrel of oil doesn't show up in your gas tank. It has to be refined. Mm-hmm. And the refineries in this country were designed for pre-pandemic when we're actually using less oil and more renewable power. And development was very different pre-pandemic. And the global supply chain was also very different. It was much more on demand. Now we're no longer moving away. We're actually no longer be on demand society. It's going to be more of a stockpile behavior society where everyone's going to brace for a supply chain problem, whether it be higher fuel prices or, Lord forbid, there's a war or you know, another pandemic or whatever shows up. So it is a huge behavior, particularly in retail, energy, you know, services that try to figure out exactly what inventory look like and try to, you know, anticipate customer behavior. So on the good front, you know, those of us on basic service, utility company, you know, is seeing about 39% cut in power from this winter time coming up in May 1st. And we got in there before OPEC responded. So, you know, that's there as well. And OPEC also responds to the global economy. So inflation is still horrid in Europe. I mean, there's still almost a double-digit inflation. So this creates a lot of pressure on consumers, which again creates pressure on OPEC because they can't get best price. And China hasn't done what everyone thought China did. I think people had this misconception that 600 million consumers in China would suddenly wake up and spend money in droves. That hasn't happened. There's pockets during Chinese New Year. I mean, you know, at the casinos in Macau, you know, a massive travel, but not travel far. They traveled within the geographic zone around China. They expect this massive industrial complex to reactivate overnight. It hasn't happened. Will it happen? Probably. But, you know, China, 600 million consumers in China are still kind of picking and choosing the moments trying to be careful how they spend their money too. Because, you know, we had the benefit of things like unemployment and direct stimulus checks from the federal government. They didn't receive those same benefits. They don't operate the same way we do. They don't operate the same as Europe. Given the fact they don't have the same systems we have, consumers behave differently, right? Mm-hmm. Never presume how what we do things here is how other people do in the world.
Right. Yeah. Hey, speaking of international affairs, the House Speaker visited the President of Taiwan.
Yeah, on a stopover. Right. You know, you have a legal reason to come through the United States and, you know, we're not trying to arrest you, then, you know, that's fine. And like any good stopover, you know, if you have a long stopover, you know, you could get out of the plane, you leave the airport and go see things. In this case, is the Ronald Reagan Library. She had a tour provided by Speaker McCarthy.
That's right.
it's again reassuring the Taiwanese public in particular that there is going to be some assistance. The United States is one of our longest trade partners in the world now, and the president needs to reassure the people at home. And again, I mean, they've not met the U.S. president. However, they've met, one of the so-called third in line for the presidency, because the name changes succession if the president, vice president dies. But, also one of the most powerful people, in the country. And Chuck Schumer being the other one in the Senate majority leader. So, her, making the rounds here, on the foreign diplomacy part is very important for both trade and defense. Same time, though, it's sending positive messages back home by U.S. lawmakers about our continued commitment to democratic governments, democratic institutions. The Chinese constantly like to give warnings. It's kind of like their job description. I mean, it's not like Kevin McCarthy's going to go to China. I mean, they can go ahead and just sanction him. I mean, it's like... Yeah, and also it's different rules around here. I do know that Congress people have a lot of ability to make side money. And actually, a lot of legislators around the country has a lot more flexibility than we do actually making side money. You'd be surprised exactly how lax some of the ethics laws compared to our ethics laws. But it isn't like he's got like massive holdings of, a Chinese company in anybody's portfolio. And like I said, it isn't like he does business in China travel. So I fully expect, China will try to figure out if they should start sanctioning U.S. lawmakers. Mm-hmm. And of course, we will respond in kind. I mean, we already sanctioned certain top heads of the Russian government and the Chinese government. And they did like return sanctions against like the press secretaries of the president, which big deal, right? It's not like, I know this is the kind of the tit for tat nature of diplomacy.
It's very school playgroundish. Yeah.
Yeah. Because again, on both sides, neither sanctioned individuals are going to come to each other's country anyway.
Right.
It's one of those, again, tit for tat issues that in real world terms doesn't mean a whole lot in our lives. Yeah. But for optics purposes, selling it to your own constituents, it's important.
And, yeah.
The President of Taiwan's visit to U.S. Is a good sell to her constituents at home. And her party is facing re-election. She is not running for re-election as president. I think she's terminated out to terms as president. But, I mean, her own party is trying to survive this coming election. So there's the real politics there, too, that, you may not think about. But from her standpoint and her political party, these are good optics for them at home.
You know, what we haven't talked about, Jackie, is the indictment of former President Trump and your feelings about that.
It's a white-collar crime. I mean, it's a complicated crime, just like the whole thing regarding Trump Enterprises bookkeeping problems, which took like a decade for the DA's office to unravel. I'm sure the IRS is also trying to unravel. Unraveled this so they can go after the corporate entity themselves. It's different to, when it's a white collar taxation issue against a corporation versus you directly regarding, fraudulent transfer of funds and non-disclosure, proper disclosure. We haven't seen actually all the indictments. I mean, the DA has been, releasing them a little bit in part. So I don't know all the details. I will say this, though. If you're moving money to an individual to do work for you, and that is really just a way for that other individual to give to a third party, and you mark it down as a business expense, that will get you in trouble, just to tell you all. So if in this case, Michael Cohen, Trump gave money to Michael Cohen to give to Stormy Daniels, claiming that Michael Cohen did lawyer work for him. Bagman is not lawyer work, but you charge it as a business expense. There's also, that's fraud.
Yeah. And he's already done time for that, Michael Cohen. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He sung like a bird because, he gets short time. And this is the state DA office. There is no federal component in this instance. So a president cannot pardon a state crime. That's a governor's job or governor's council or whatever mechanism in your state is regarding review of commuting and pardoning folks. Every state's different. We'll see how it plays out. It's going to be a little bit of a circus, obviously. Again, these things take a long time to put together, a long time to go through the legal process. Depending on what state you were in, it may disqualify you from the ballot. Every state is different regarding ballot qualifications. People don't know that it's a non-uniform system. Because under the Constitution, states control elections. So your qualifications get invalid in Massachusetts, not the same qualifications in Georgia. And you can be disqualified based on things like felonies, depending what state you're in. So this could have some really interesting ramifications, because if you can't get on the ballot, you got a problem. And you got to go get signatures and file paperwork. It's very involved. You have to hire a whole team of people that know state election laws to find out, you know, how you can qualify for the ballot. It's not like, you know, running for local office, you just grab your papers because, you know, you're just running inside Massachusetts. So let's see. We'll see how it plays out. I don't know all the details. The one example regarding fraudulent movement of money is very serious. Actually, it is very serious. I mean, people go to jail for that in Massachusetts. I mean, I can name a certain former Speaker of the House that did that, right? And also, fraudulent representation during the election cycle. The president is subject to state laws regarding campaigning in the state on top of federal laws, especially the Elections Commission, a federal Elections Commission as well. So, you know, when you're running for U.S. president, you actually comply with two laws. One is the state laws, as well as the federal election laws.
Stay tuned, as you say, for sure. We'll see how it impacts the 2024 presidential race as well.
Agreed. And, you know, right now Trump is stomping all current and potential contenders for Republican primary. He's just stomping them badly. And Ron DeSantis, switching gears really quickly here, really needs to change his messaging. I mean, he's done nothing to focus on economic development. He's been focusing on social issues, which may play to a certain part of the base, but the rest of us who, you know, basically the majority of Americans care about the economy more than social issues. And him going after Disney, well, I do understand, is a huge multinational corporation, and how he went about it on using government interference on a corporation because he didn't like the corporation's opinion of something. Basically, he didn't like the First Amendment rights of the people to work at the corporation. He decided to use the strength of the government to smack him with the legislature. That is not good business, folks. You know, this is still America. You have the First Amendment. You should not be, you know, persecuted by anybody to ruin your business because they don't like your opinion.
Certainly not by a government.
Especially by government.
Yeah, so, I think we fought a revolution for that.
Yeah, and taking on Disney, and Disney is still Disney. They're very successful, very smart corporation that I won't say everybody loves Disney, but I mean fairly well received by most of the population. Not to say everyone loves the business, but I mean people go to the theme parks, we watch Marvel movies, people like to go to cruise ship, and people take their kids to Disney on Ice. So I mean, you know, if you didn't like
pretty successful, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't like the corporation, I mean, then people wouldn't be doing those things. So you know, Ron DeSantis really needs to, if he's going to announce for presidency, and like I said, he's trailing behind Trump badly at the moment on the hypothetical polling. This is not the right message you want to send. I mean, social issues, particularly right now, this high inflationary period and wage growth isn't keeping up and there's a fair recession, you know, economy. But you know, he's overshadowed by one issue right now, attacking Disney against First Amendment rights.
Yeah, well, he can be president of Florida then.
Yeah, he needs to switch gears quickly because I fully expect Donald Trump to focus, you know, economy. He did that before. He did it a second time. He's going to do it again. And fear mongering aside, economy.
We could go on all day, but we can't because we're out of time.
Oh, well, I don't think anybody wants to look at us all afternoon. I mean, we're not
ceasing. I agree, at least for me anyway. So contact you, Techie.
Sure. 617-722-2370. I do get your messages. People do tell me what's going on in the office because we are staffed. So, you know, want to visit the state house, please do it in room 42. One of us will be there at some point. Because that's, it's a long we have rotating staff and we have a lot of briefings in this building now. The building's opened up. So at some point, there's always somebody there, but everybody's everywhere else. It's returned to some normality in the state. People don't realize that we go running around the building, you know, to briefings and events and whatnot, as opposed to just sitting in our offices. We're coming back to pre-COVID, folks. It's a little trickier these days. So you're going to get voicemail every so often. But if you're concerned about the voicemail, smash a button. But we have Beth up front who's answering the phone. So you should get a human now. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Please give us an email. Right now, I'm getting bracing for budget request emails as we approach next week. Obviously, State Representative Tacky Chan. You can see my pictures of feeding stingray at the Aquarium Hospital at the Forever Bridge, if Forever Shipyard.
The turtles, yeah.
Yeah, you can see they're right next to the Cashman Shop, and Bluefin on the other side is sandwiched inside that building as the Newark Aquarium Hospital. So you see me stingrays and stingrays, feeding stingrays and looking at turtles and how come they need to be rehabbed and the reason they got there. And of course, at TackyChan.Twitter, puts information out there, and TackyChan.org and MALegislature.gov. I'm sorry, yeah, TackyChan.org and MALegislature.gov. We are no longer publishing public hearings on social media. It is all run through MALegislature.gov will be all the public hearings will be on that site. So my office is getting ready to do public hearings. We agreed to a schedule, which will be changed every so often. I mean, it's not like I said in stone with my co-chair. So if people want to see me back in the hearing room, we should be getting ready soon as my staff starts locking down rooms, which is very competitive right now. We're in a mad dash to try to get a hearing room. There's 28 committees, folks. 32 or 36 of the standing committees decided to hold oversight hearings. So, yeah.
Space is at a premium.
Yeah, as you can imagine, all our staffs in the building are dashing to try to find hearing space. Again, we're coming back to pre-pandemic. When this is all virtual, we can do whatever you wanted. It was actually
pretty town, cool. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually pretty simple when you did it by this format and hearing. Let's just do a hearing. I mean, you know, put the notice out and meet the requirements and the joint rules and off we go. But now it's like, you know, now we're fighting for space. It is coming back to a new normal of some form, including fighting for hearing room space.
All right, Tacky, appreciate it. We'll check in next week.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you next week, Joe.